Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, welcome to In the Pink, sponsored by Bose. Stay home, stay healthy, stay connected.
Let's talk about that transition then. You were shooting at a very high level and now you find yourself racing cars. How did that happen?
I was a mechanic in the garage. I had gone to my City and Guild certificate in Glasgow and passed my test there. And there was a very rich young man in Glasgow whose family, not unusual by the way, there was a single boy and only child in the family. And he was a very rich family. And the trustees would not allow him to drive. He had very nice, expensive cars, but he wasn't allowed to race. He could drive, but wouldn't allow to race. Our garage, because my brother's success as a racing driver, was quite well known, and I was the mechanic in the garage. And he brought his cars down, and I prepared them for other people to drive the cars. And one time, one of the boys bent his car a bit and I had to repair it, and as a reward he said, why don't you do a wee event? Well, it was a sprint somewhere called Heathfield in Ayrshire near Turnberry and Prestwick, and I didn't win the race, but I was second, and he said, oh, you better have another go, and I won the next race. But then I couldn't afford, it was costing, and I was married, and I had her, you know, Paul at that time, and I turned the rest of the drives down because I thought it was too dangerous, and I couldn't afford it. Cost £50 a day for the insurance, and I didn't have £50. I mean, I didn't have £50 in the bank or anywhere else for that matter. And he said, "Oh well, look, I'll do the insurance if you'll drive the car." And of course, Acuria Cost then saw me, because I was only racing in Scotland to begin with, really. And then they picked me up. And of course, I went down south, Goodwoods, Netherton, Silverstone, you know, there's Ruxton everywhere, with Acuria Cost, driving sports cars. And I was winning a lot. And then Ken Tittle spotted me. And actually, I think it was the manager of the Goodwood test racetrack who said to Ken, if you're looking for a new driver, you should look after this, look at this guy, because he just got the lap record, the sports cars in Goodwood for a Acuria Cost, it was in a Cooper Monaco. And he picked me up. I went down to Goodwood, did the test, got the drive. My first drive was Snetterton, and I won it in the rain by a big margin, so we said, oh, it's great. And that's what started it.
And so how old were you then?
I was 23 when I got married. I went with Ken in 1964. So I was born in 39. You work that out. I'm the dyslexic.
Doesn't mean bad at maths as well. Come on. So 25. So, you know that race that you said that you came second in Scotland, you do know that the winner has been bragging ever since that he beat a three-time world champion.
Absolutely. And he had every right to. He's a lovely man. He's a farmer in the north of England, in Newcastle somewhere.
Amazing. Why do you think it is that there is such a rich history of motorsport in Scotland? You've produced some great drivers through the decades.
We have an inferiority complex against you English folk, and we try harder. The roads are narrow and twisty and turny and ups and downs, and the borders of Scotland, where Jim Clark started, was that kind of road, and where I drove all the cars from the garage and everything like that were all twisty, difficult roads. And I think that had a lot to do with it, really. And I think the other thing is that we're such a small country, and I think, still think, we've got an inferiority complex in the country, because when I went down south to drive, everybody was so well dressed and the cars were immaculate and they had a mechanic and they were, the whole thing, they just had money, and we had no money. So therefore, you think, geez, I'm going to have to, you know, how do I, I've got to win. So we won. And when you did that, it was, and I think that's the Scottish thing. I think it's a very Scottish thing. I think we have an inferiority complex, and we therefore try harder. Think of all the great bankers. So William Purvis, one of the greatest bankers in the world, chairman of HSBC, that was really developed by him and its biggest, all sorts of people. The man who created the American Navy was Scottish. The man who created television was Scottish. There's a whole bunch of Scottish people. I think they try harder because they're in the back room sort of thing. And therefore, when they go down south, they've got to prove themselves, because they don't want to go back with their, you know, hands behind their back. And I know I felt like that.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. Another bit of interesting psychology, I think, with you is this juxtaposition between someone who cares about safety and somebody who is a racing driver. And, you know, there's the often simplistic assumption that racing drivers are brash and a bit reckless and thrill seekers. And it doesn't feel to me that you've ever been a thrill seeker, but you are somehow able to compartmentalize and almost shut away the jeopardy of what you did for a living, and still deliver at the highest level. Have you ever taken time now, particularly since, you know, you retired back in, what, 73? You were relatively young when you retired, but have you ever sort of self-analyzed your approach to the sport?
I think the determination issue to succeed, whether it was in my shooting, because I was no good at school, and that was your main activity was school in those days, to grow up. And I failed in that, and I found something in my shooting that I could actually do well. So I put more into my shooting almost than I did into my racing, because it was my first experience of competition, proper competition. I was no competition at school. I played football quite well at school, but it's the classroom. So I think in things like that, when I went motor racing, I thought, oh gosh, that's a big thing to do that. So therefore I've got to try harder. And I recognized that I needed the best team and the best mechanics. So I never drove, hardly ever did I drive anything but the best packages. Ecuria Corse, a Scottish team, when I started to drive for them, they had already had a huge success. They had won Le Mans twice as private entrants, so their mechanics were really good. So I went in there and was looked after by what I thought some of the best mechanics in the world. So therefore, I could get a car that I could have total confidence in. And, you know, I didn't have any wheels fall off because they were the best guys. And David Murray, who was le patron of Ecuria Corse, he had a Cooper Monaco. That was like, it was built like the Eiffel Tower, that thing. It was, you know, it was sort of stood for years. I wrote it off. But what I mean is that when I got into that car, I was driving a real good car, so I had to raise my game, so to speak. And I think going back to the same what I said, I was desperate to win and put more into it maybe. And because I was winning, I therefore kept, I drove for checkered flag racing in Lotus Elans. But that meant I was racing against the Ron Harris Lotus Elans with Jim Clark and Peter Arundel. So I had to be as fast as them. So in each of the categories, they were Formula One drivers. I was a little sports car driver. But to be racing against somebody like Jim Clark or any of the other drivers we were there at that time, it drives you. But if you're choosing the best teams with the best cars, I drove for John Coombs. He was one of the great entrants. Like Stirling Moss wanted to be with Rob Walker. These kind of alignments help you because they always have the best people behind them, the mechanics usually. Ken Tyrrell, nobody, no better example than that. Three of the mechanics come to this room that I'm in now almost every year. I would not be here today if it wasn't for them. I didn't have wheels to fall off.
My cars
were just better repaired.
So that gave you a confidence to compete. That gave you a confidence to push yourself. But you've already told us that Helen counted 57 deaths of friends of yours. So you can't have felt impervious to that threat. So how did you reconcile those two elements of your life? The fact that you were acutely aware of the danger, but you were still able to race.
I seldom overdrove. Most people overdrive. I learned not to overdrive from Jim Clark, who I think was the second best racing driver ever in the world. I think Juan Manuel Fangio was the best, and I think Jim Clark was second best, ahead of Schumacher, ahead of Senna or Prost, and Senna in my case, I think. And I learned so much from him. And I saw how gentle he was with a car and how he coaxed a car into doing things rather than bullying a car to do it. And a lot of the drivers bully cars and cars don't like it.
Yeah.
Cars are like humans. If you treat them nicely, I sometimes make the opinion of respectfully to do with the young ladies. If you treat them nicely, they much prefer it. And a racing car is exactly the same. I learned that if you're doing 150 mile an hour, 180 mile an hour, and you're breaking a hammer at some fancy corner, you to begin with, when you're a racer, there was three parts of the corner: the braking, the apex, and the exit. I learned there was eight parts of the corner, because when you get towards the corner, the first thing you do is take off your gas pedal. The car immediately gets upset. So take your gas pedal off gently, even at that speed. In a millisecond, it can be done gently rather than just taking it off. The same with the brake, the same with the gear shift, the same with the steering wheel, and the same with the exit. So instead of having three things, you get eight things. And I learned to do that. And eight things out of one corner. Now, there's usually 14 to 16 corners per lap. So to learn that was what I did, but I always following somebody who I thought and still believe was one of the greatest drivers that's ever lived. I never raced against Stirling Moss, but I did against Jim Clark. I did against a whole lot of other people. And for me, I learned so much coming through the ranks because I was going with Ecurie, of course. That was a good team. And then I got to be with Ken Tyrrell in Formula 3. And then I got to BRM with Graham Hill. And then I got to the Matra. And then we won world championships. So it was because I was lucky enough to choose the best people to go to bed with.
And let's talk a bit more about Jim Clark, because you were actually flatmates, weren't you?
And yeah, we had, yeah.
You must have had a good few years.
John, there was a racing driver called John Whitmore, who was a great guy. He was from an aristocratic family. And anyway, he drove Cortinas really well and lots of other things, GT40s. But he was a rich young man. He had a lovely apartment just off Hyde Park. And we called it the Scottish Embassy, because he gave it to us for Jimmy and I to be whenever we were in London or England. We stayed at the Scottish Embassy. And of course, Jimmy was never married. And of course, he had a long line of girlfriends. You girls try to take advantage of racing drivers all the time. And
do not include me in that, okay? Not in that list.
So it was quite a busy place for a while. Helen and I, of course, went down there a lot, and she was with me a lot. And Jim Glatt was the worst possible decision maker I've ever known in my whole life. He wouldn't know which restaurant to go to or what cinema to go to. And before he made up his mind, they were all closed. But he, on the track, he was unbelievable. But
I find that so interesting, because you could say that about a few on the grid now. I won't name them, but there's a couple that I've seen away from the track, completely unable to make a decision. And yet, visor goes down and they go for gaps that don't even exist. What is that about? Is it like an alter ego?
When the visor goes down, the lights go out, and they become different people. You know, there's no emotion. You do things in a different way. I learned to remove emotion, for example, when driving a racing car. And, you know, I think, I don't know what it is, but that's the way it was. And, you know, Jim Clark was a very indecisive man. I mean, he never got married, and he had a very long-time girlfriend, and he had a few other young ladies who, of course, tried to take advantage of him. So therefore there were happy days.
There's some joy in indecision, maybe. I don't know.
Thanks so much for listening to In the Pink. I hope you've enjoyed the podcasts you've listened to so far. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. Check out our Instagram page at in_the_pink. And you get all the details there about how you can win some of those Bose noise-cancelling headphones. And join the community. We're all talking about the various guests that we've had on the podcast and who we'd like to see and hear in the next few weeks. So thank you for joining us. Stay with us. Stay healthy. Stay home. Stay connected with Bose.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.